The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with a bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Oh, it's my jam, baby. It's my jam. Here we go. Mixed martial arts. Mixed martial arts. How do we like our martial arts? We like it mixed. Woo!
Get excited, everybody, because we are coming off of UFC 277. And the next card in line is tomorrow. It's tomorrow night at the Apex. And nothing better than coming off of a pay-per-view week than a six-fight main card that starts at 10 p.m. Eastern. We do have some stakes in the main event. As you can see, the faces of the two men who will be battling it out, Thiago Santos and Jamahal Hill. And the co-main event is spectacular. We're going to do our best to just make you want to watch this card tomorrow. But thank you for joining us for the UFC Vegas 59 preview show. I am Mike Heck. We got Shaheen Alshadi here. We have the Prince of Positivity here, who's probably going to guide us through a lot of this, Mr. Alexander Kaye.
Ultimate Fighter 30 finale. Ultimate, I don't want to hear this UFC Vegas 59, whatever, UFC on ESPN, whatever. Ultimate Fighter 30 finale, Saturday night.
That is... Get excited, everybody. Get excited. And AK's going to walk us through some of the comings and goings of these Ultimate Fighter finale fights, because I got to be honest with you, AK, I have no clue what's going on there, so you can hopefully lead us in the right direction. So, gentlemen, let's begin with the top of the bill. We got Thiago Santos versus Jamahal Hill. Shaheen, I will begin with you. We got five rounds. The last couple Thiago Santos fight night main events have not been the most compelling, but Jamahal Hill has been super compelling. Over his last few appearances, he gets in, he gets out, he punches a quick clock and doesn't get paid by the minute. So your thoughts on this main event, what stands out to you? Does Santos need this one more, or does Jamahal Hill need this one more?
Okay, so that's an interesting way to start this, by framing it that way, because I would say that Thiago Santos needs this more, right? Like, that feels pretty apparent. This feels like the UFC sort of doing the UFC thing of, hey, this guy who was a very exciting fan favorite for a long time, challenged for the title, almost won the damn title. He's sort of on his last legs. It seems like that apparent to everybody. And so, hey, we'll see what we can squeeze, that last drop we can squeeze out of him with a young, hungry up-and-comer who maybe can build a name off of Thiago Santos. That's what it seems like is up at stake here. And that's sort of how the UFC seems to be framing this, that this is the Jamahal Hill show. If you look at even the YouTube, the social media that they're pushing out, it's sort of the Jamahal Hill week. Feels like they're about to push him to sort of be that next guy at 205. And it makes sense. I mean, if you look at the 205 ranks, I would say obviously Magomed Ankalaev is sort of the leader of the new blood, right? The prospect. I don't even know he's a prospect anymore, but just sort of the new face, new contender that everyone's most excited about, I think highest about. But then past that, I would say Jamahal Hill is probably that second guy. Like, I don't know that there's another young, hungry up-and-comer at 205 that we would rate above Jamahal Hill in terms of potential and talent outside of that. So, I mean, this sort of seems to be the Jamahal Hill show. And for Thiago Santos, I mean, this is a guy who has, at this point, lost four of his last five. I believe the last few have been really painful to watch. I'm a little surprised they're throwing him back into the main event, considering how his last few main events have gone. But again, I think they just believe that Jamal Hill is going to push the action, make sure that this is a fun fight rather than the last few we saw with Thiago Santos. I mean, the Ankalaev fight was decidedly not that. And, you know how it goes. But we'll see. Who needs it more? Thiago Santos needs it more. Because if he loses on Saturday, feels like that's sort of the end of Thiago Santos's run as a contender who matters, someone who can maybe make a run in this division, and someone who for a long, long time was guaranteed excitement. And I think we've just seen sort of that final chapter from.
Of course, perfect timing. Wouldn't be a Friday preview show. We even moved the times around, and the landscapers are like, you know what? He must be doing a preview show, so let's mow the damn lawn right in front of his house. So we will try to battle through this. AK, your thoughts on this main event. And Jed Meshew, you know, he can be a little painfully honest, and he feels like Thiago Santos has been one of the most boring fighters on the roster. He has said these words. I'm not trying to – I'm not taking him out of context. But Jamal Hill's the kind of guy that can bring the excitement out of anybody, and you kind of need to have that because, yikes, Santos, these last couple of fights, these last 50 minutes have just not been all that fun. But I feel like you have to be somewhat fun to compete with a guy like Jamal Hill, who's just going to blow the doors off you. So can Jamal Hill be the guy to bring back exciting Thiago Santos?
This is my face. Look at this face. Does this face tell you what I think of the chances of that happening are? Listen, I'm supposed to be the prince of positivity. Yeah, that's what you want to believe. You want to believe that we've got an older veteran fighter with his back to the wall. He's a bit of a wounded animal. You know, if you're just looking at his record, 4 out of 5 losses, and the Johnny Walker win was certainly nothing to write home about. So, I mean, that may as well have been a loss in the eyes of the public. So, it's you want to believe that. Okay, well, he's going to come out like Woodley did against Luque or something like that. You know what I mean? Just like, just not come out swing. But I don't know if that's who he is. I don't know if that's who he's ever been. He's an amazing technical striker. And you know, when he was younger, when he was facing certain opponents, like that was to his advantage. It still could be against Jamal Hill. But should we be looking forward to an exciting matchup? I don't think so, you know? And I think Jamal Hill is going to have to be very respectful of Thiago Santos's skill too, right? I mean, he has a youth advantage. He's going to have an athleticism advantage, size advantage, all reasons that he should come out aggressive, look to finish early, which I think I want to lean towards that. I want to lean towards it's going to be a finish in the first or second round. But either way, whether it goes 5 rounds or whether Hill finishes early, I just don't think we're going to get a great outing from Thiago Santos. It sounds so harsh to say. I'm trying to put it in a nicer way than Jed has done on recent programming. But I'm kind of in agreement with him as far as how Thiago Santos has looked and how he will probably look on Saturday.
I don't know that
Sean,
that sounds...
Just look, go ahead.
Oh, just yeah, go ahead. Quickly, I don't even know that sounds harsh, right? Like, that's just sort of the realistic look at what we've been given. Because, I mean, we're not wrong in that, like, Thiago Santos has not lit the world on fire these last few. We've sort of, ever since he basically blew out both knees against John Jones, he has been a certain type of guy, and it's been a couple years at this point. Like, if you see the evidence continually pile up in front of you, it doesn't feel harsh to point it out. Like, again, this is someone who had a very long and successful career in the UFC. I think, unfortunately, this is just sort of the reality of this one.
It's really interesting just seeing, I mean, just looking at the comments here, Jamal Hill's going to go out and starch him. He's going to go fight Jiří after he starches Thiago Santos. I mean, do you think, can Santos like find a chip on his shoulder here? Because look at this is a flying under the radar guy right now, a guy who took John Jones to the limit with like no legs and somehow made it the distance. A lot of people feel he won this fight. And since then, some tough losses, just some tough fights overall, but everybody counting this man out, Sean Al-Shaadi. Is this surprising to you, or did you expect this all week heading into this one?
No, again, I mean, I think this is just fair. This is sort of par for the course. But I will say, I will point out, you look at the fights that Thiago Santos has had recently, especially during this long layoff, right? Or not layoff, but like slump that he's been on. The opponents he's been facing. John Jones, obviously, that was the first of the losses. And then right after that, once he healed, Glover Teixeira, Alexander Rakic, Magomed Ankalaev. that's not a bad set of losses, right? Like, that's more or less three, four of the top guys in the entire division. That's that you basically just named the top five outside of Blachowicz and Jiří Procházka. So, like, there is still a case to be made if someone wants to make it that Thiago Santos is not sort of this guy who is completely, completely done. He certainly seems to believe, obviously, that he still has another run left in the title. He told our own Guillermo Cruz that this week, that he still feels like he has one more bullet left in the chamber. The Jamal Hill, though, I mean, if he did lose to Jamal Hill this weekend, that would be the worst name on this entire run. And that would be sort of the I would say, the one that points you in the direction of where this is actually going. Because again, losing to Ankalaev, losing to Glover Teixeira, even Rakic, that's one thing. But I would say Jamal Hill is a tier decidedly below those guys, at least right now. And that would sort of be the nail in the coffin in my mind, and I think a lot of fans' minds. But we can see. I mean, there's a reason they fight the fights, and who knows? Maybe Thiago Santos is still, you know, he sort of finds himself in that similar Tony Ferguson spot where a lot of people feel like Tony Ferguson is just completely done, but there's a good chance Tony Ferguson might still be a top 15 fighter, just might not be a top five fighter anymore. And I think that there's a chance Thiago Santos might be that as well.
Yeah, that was an interesting comment I just saw right there, because Jamal Hill, if he can perform in the octagon and with a microphone in front of his face, that could sort of determine where he goes. Like, if he comes out, because Magomed Ankalaev went out and won and just said, what else do I have to do to fight for a title? But if Jamal Hill goes out there and starts just Thiago Santos, AK, and just starts screaming at Jan Blachowicz, saying, hey, Yanni, it's me and you, buddy. I deserve this opportunity. I just knocked out Thiago Santos. I'm the guy that should be fighting you. Maybe there's a chance he gets that. But if he comes out and he goes, you know, whatever the UFC gives me, maybe he's going to fight like a Jacoby or a Khalil Roundtree type. But I'll get your thoughts on that. Also, AK, I know you love betting on MMA. You try to push that in everybody's direction. You'll probably give a promo code to help save some people some money. But Jamal Hill, according to our friends at DraftKings, a -320 favorite, the comeback of Thiago Santos, +265, AK. Your thoughts on where Hill can go with the win and just being such a massive favorite here?
It's completely understandable. Again, we've said it a bunch of times. It just feels like we've seen the best of Thiago Santos, which was very, very good. And we want to clarify, the best of Thiago Santos was very, very good for a long time. But we haven't seen it in a while. I think, maybe, you know, he had his moments against Glover. I mean, there was moments against Glover. That's like the best we saw of him. And he still went on to lose that fight. But so the line is completely understandable. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it moved even a little bit more in Hill's direction by the time fight night rolled around. You have to favor youth in these kind of scenarios. Hill is the least experienced of the people in our top 15, the MMA Fighting Global Rankings top 15. He think he's only been fighting since 2017. So, you know, he's still this kind of fresh face. There's still a lot of mystery around him, but people really, really like what they've seen. He's got the tools. He's got the demeanor. There's something about him that I think would make you feel confident in putting money down on him. So the line doesn't surprise me at all. I really bunctious call out. I would love to see it. I think, as you mentioned, it's much more likely we get the, you know, I'm just happy to be, you know, keep getting main events and getting this experience. And Thiago Santos is a warrior, man. You know, Thiago Santos is a warrior. And it's an honor stepping to the cage with him. And whatever is next for me, I'll sign the contract. Let's go. You know, something like that. So I think we could hear that verbatim on Saturday. And if so, that's fine. Good for Jamal Hill. He's, what, 31 years old? Like I said, doesn't have a lot of mileage on him. If he wants to kind of take a slow road to the top, that's fine. Plus, maybe he doesn't want to, he and his team don't want to deal with the politics of what's going on with, you know, with Jiří and Glover and Jan Blachowicz and whoever else, Magomed Ankalaev. There's just all this other stuff that's kind of ahead of him. Even with a big finish, it would take a real change in how the company perceives, not the fans, but how the company perceives him for them to leapfrog him into like a big fight with Jiří or even to get Jiří or Glover or Jan Blachowicz.
It's very rare that we have breaking news about the card we're talking about as we're talking about it. We have breaking news, Casey. Throw on the breaking news music.
Oh my gosh.
Sam Alvey has successfully made weight on his second attempt, 186. He's a go. He's a go. So there you go. No weight miss. There was a slight concern of a weight miss, and that's how the headline's going to read. Sam Alvey makes weight despite slight concern on first attempt. That's how it's going to go down. So good on Sam Alvey. Gets it done. He will now fight Mikhail Oleksaychuk on weight and not having to forfeit any of his purse. Ariane Lipsky, different story. Perhaps we'll talk about that a little bit later. let's go to the picks. Shaheen, we'll begin with you. Does the Jamal Hill Sweet Dreams Tour continue on, or does Thiago Santos come back and play the greatest hits and shut the damn door on the young man?
No, I mean, I think the fans, the viewers, all of us here on this show can sort of see where this is trending, right? Like, I would be surprised if anybody among us three picks Thiago Santos. I will say, Jamal Hill, that would be the biggest win for Jamal Hill by far. If you look at his resume and sort of the names that he's been able to conquer so far in the UFC, Thiago Santos would by far be the best name among them. But to me, this does feel set up for a reason. This is the Jamal Hill show. I'm actually a little bit in disagreement with AK. To me, Jamal Hill is very good on the mic. He's very fiery. He's been very fiery this whole week. And it feels like he sort of understands the promotional side of the game pretty well. And I think he can sort of see an opportunity that's developing here at 205 to be able to advance quickly up the ranks for that reason that we mentioned earlier, that he's basically the second best up-and-coming name, new name, fresh blood that's in this division. I would be surprised if he doesn't have a name on the tip of his tongue, something like a Jan Blachowicz or something like that, if he's able to win on Saturday. But ultimately, I do see this being the Jamal Hill show. I hope it's something that's not similar to the last few Thiago Santos fights, especially for all y'all East Coasters and European fans who are watching this at like probably 2 a.m. or whenever this is going to be. That's a really long night to then land on a 25-minute just nothing fest. But ultimately, I see Jamal Hill getting this done, and I do think he'll find himself a finish, maybe second round, third round.
AK, over under 2.5, and who wins this fight?
I'll go under. I know I said I'm worried about, you know, Thiago Santos coming out listless and maybe not engaging, and Jamal Hill respecting his skills and not forcing him to engage. But I think maybe after a round of feeling out, Jamal Hill will kind of have a good idea of just what kind of like Thiago Santos he's dealing with, what Maheta he's got, you know, in the cage with him that night. And if he doesn't see, you know, that he's in any serious danger, pushes the pace in the second round, hurts Thiago Santos in the feet, finishes with, you know, some ground and pound. So I'm definitely going to go under 2.5 and say Jamal Hill by TKO.
Unfortunately, I'm on the side that a lot of people seem to be on. I think Jamal Hill is going to win. I don't think it's going to be the most thrilling fight. I think Jamal's going to try it. He's going to really try hard to make this fun. But I think Thiago Santos might take him down a couple of times. I think things might get a little hairy. But I think in the end, Jamal Hill will get the win. He will be a trier in trying to make this fight exciting. But I see maybe like a 49-46. And yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. Now, I see a lot of people just dumping on this card in general. And
the PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
There's not a lot to love here, if we're being honest. Like, good for the fighters on the card. I'm excited to see. There's some fun matchups. I expect a lot of highlight reel finishes here. But, Sean, I'm going to turn this right over to you because this co-main event, despite how you feel about the rest of this card, freaking rules, man. We got Vicente Luque and we got Jeff Neal. I'm just going to step aside and let you do your thing.
Exactly. You say, you know, there's not a lot to like on this card. And you're right. There isn't a lot to like on this card. But there is one thing to love on this card. There is one thing that you should absolutely be tuning in for, regardless of whether you're watching the whole thing or not. And that's this damn co-main, because this co-main is really the main event. We all know it. Vicente Luque has been my guy for a long, long time. One of the most underappreciated fighters in the entire damn UFC. That man is guaranteed excitement every time out. And he was overlooked for so long in this welterweight division, and sort of one of the biggest victims of the logjam that had sort of developed at the top of this welterweight division, where for so long he is on, you know, this incredible streak fighting the Derek Crances, the Mike Perrys, the Brian Barberinas of the world, instead of getting the actual opportunities he's deserving from going out there and just knocking fools out every single damn time we see him. This, again, one of the most exciting fighters in the whole UFC. If you look up and down his record, I think he's probably got like one or two decisions, and most of those are in his losses. Like, if he's winning, he's winning in an exciting fashion. He's coming off that tough shot against Bilal Muhammad. I think that was a disappointing look for a lot of us who have sort of been supporting Vicente throughout this and following him throughout this. That was a tough look, snap to that four-fight streak. But Bilal Muhammad has, again, been a very successful and underrated contender in this welterweight division. I don't know that losing to Bilal in the way that he lost to Bilal is too big of a knock on him. And to me, Vicente Luque is still someone out there who is a danger to anybody he fights at 170. He's only 30 years old. So even with all the mileage he has in the UFC, a lot of that mileage is him giving it the other way than rather than getting it. So I feel like he's still got fresh legs in this division, and he is still a compelling contender for anybody. And he finds himself coming up against Jeff Neal, who is kind of in like low key in dire need of a really good performance, a really good win. Jeff Neal's another guy who has been really entertaining throughout his welterweight run, mostly knocking fools out until we got to that little slump where he hit Magny and Thompson back to back. The Ponzinibbio fight was a good rebound for him, but even that was a split decision. I think this is an important fight for Jeff Neal, also a very important fight for Vicente Luque. And I like the idea of both of these dudes who are just murderers coming out there absolutely fired up, ready to sort of reclaim their spot, again, put their stamp on this and sort of shout to everyone at this 170-pound division that they're still here, they still matter, and you ain't going to forget about them. I can't wait. I love this fight so much.
I don't think you could say much more than that. Shaheen, -190 favorite for Vicente Luque, which is kind of surprising. Not that he's a favorite, but that the line is this wide. Jeff Neal comes back at +160, but you can't really add much to that, AK. So before that fight happens, we have the two Ultimate Fighter finale fights. We have Zach Hyuga versus Muhammad Usman, the brother of welterweight champion Kamaru Usman. We have Juliana Miller taking on Brogan Walker. You have been the guy who has basically dove on the tough grenade all season long. You've watched all of the episodes. You've
willingly and gleefully, too.
We're not even like, it's not a grenade. Do it. He wants it's not a grenade. I've been on Tough Island.
You own Tough Island. Listen, you're the only one left. You own the island. You bought it all
up. It's very empty these days. You don't get a lot of people passing through, but it's very exclusive. It's very brisk. You know, again, the beach is all, you want to come to the Tough Island. There's miles of beach, of uninhabited beach for days. It's fantastic. It's beautiful out here. It is a beautiful time out here. I'll go ahead. I'll speak on both finals. First of all, I think anyone who's kept up with any of the recent seasons of Tough, specifically like since sort of it came back, like Tough 28, Tough 29, and now this season Tough 30. Some fun fighters, but not a lot of people that kind of anyone is picking to become world beaters or world title contenders. I mean, you know, in the right division and with the right path to the top and with the right training, they could. I mean, these guys in this season are very, very raw. I'm trying to remember. I think the most fights that anyone on this season had was like 12. Or something like that. And it was like by far, it was like one person with 12. And then the next person was like 7. And then everyone else was like 6 or less fights. It was a very, and that kind of actually happened with the season before this one too. So it's a little bit, you know, listen, we're far from the days where you are getting anywhere near like anything resembling an elite prospect on the Ultimate Fighter. It just doesn't make sense because either they would just sign them. Contender Series would probably be the Ultimate Fighter's, the UFC's next priority. That's where you would showcase prospects. And then whatever trickles down to the Ultimate Fighter. But on Saturday, we do have, yes, Mo Usman, the younger brother of Kamaru Usman, and undefeated Zach Paga. So I think more people, of course, will be familiar with Mo. They may have seen him in the PFL. I've interviewed him for the site. They may have seen him written about before. And of course, he's Usman's brother. So you've seen him. You've just seen him around. It's not fair to compare him to Kamaru. He's nowhere near the level of skill. I don't think this is a shock to anyone. And again, he's his own man. He shouldn't just be compared to Kamaru because they're brothers. But I understand, and Kamaru will be in his corner, I'm sure. So, you know, you're gonna get that vibe. But he is an underdog to Zach Paga, rightfully so. If anyone who watched the show, Usman's fights were pretty uninspiring decision wins. Paga looks very polished, very strong on the feet. Just looks like a better fighter. So again, if for anyone who's, I'll give my pick. I imagine you guys don't have one. I think Paga is a pretty easy pick for the heavyweight finale. For the flyweights, it's a little bit trickier because I think Brogan Walker, people probably know her from Invicta. She made several appearances there. She has a win over Miranda Maverick, and she's fought some other notable names. So I think she should be favored. I believe she is the underdog against Juliana Miller. I think Miller, there's some Pena potential there as far as her having like so little actual fighting experience, but she has looked impressive. She had a really nice finish in her second fight to get to the finals. She avenged her only loss in the house. She lost to Claire Guthrie as a pro, and they fought again in the house, so she avenged that. So you can kind of say she's undefeated. But as far as actual pro fights, not counting tough, she has three. She is 2-1 heading into this finale. Brogan Walker has 9 fights, I think. Again, I understand it's not a lot of experience either way, but for me, it's just a little too much of a gap there for me to say like that Miller's just going to run over her. Miller's a really good athlete. She's going to have a great personality. That's gonna make her popular. If she sticks around in the UFC, like she can become a fan favorite very quickly. Very aggressive style, great grappler. Talent-wise, she probably does have a higher ceiling than Walker, but Walker's just been around longer. So I'm going, I think Walker is going to win a decision there. So there you go, guys. Zach Paga, Brogan Walker. Those are my picks. And I don't even know why I said this, guys, because everyone has watched the show. Everyone, I don't need to break this down, people. Everyone watched the show. Everyone has, yeah.
AK, can I ask you a question? Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm just very curious because now The Ultimate Fighter is obviously on ESPN Plus. You can stream it. I think they just dump it, right? You just can see the whole episode right
midnight on. Midnight on Monday. Midnight on Monday release.
So my question to you is, are you still watching the house drama or are you just fast forwarding right to the fights?
If there were more, there's so little of it. There's so little of it. And so many of the fights are just not good and just go the distance that like they usually take up 1/3 of the episode. Like there's not a lot of room for what little house drama there is. And I mean, listen, they kind of started weaning out the house drama. Like I want to say back when the John Jones, Chael Sonnen season, I mean, cause they had great coaching drama, but that was when Ultimate Fighter became more professional. They're like, oh, let's not ply the fighters with so much alcohol. And it's like, oh God. So yeah, I mean, the show looks snazzier now. It made sense when they, you know, became affiliated with Fox. Now at ESPN, you have this more, it's become a more professional product. You got the HD cameras and everything. They do a great job of filming like background for the fighters, going to their homes and showing some of their background. It comes off as a much more higher class show, which is, of course, unequivocally a worse version of The Ultimate Fighter. So that's where we are now. There's no drama. You just hope for a good fight. There was maybe 2 decent fights this year. Julianne Miller was Julianne Miller was definitely in one of them. Her rematch with Claire Guthrie was really fun. So I see why people are picking her, but I'm going Walker. I'm going Paga.
2 decent fights. I feel, that's rough.
Yeah. I feel like all 4 of these individuals will be in the UFC, win or lose. I feel like Julianne is going to get signed no matter what. And I'd have a hard time believing Muhammad Usman's not going to get signed, considering Kamaru and going through the tough experience, which he probably didn't even need to do, but he did anyways. So I'd be stunned if all 4 didn't get in there, but we'll see. And before that happens, we got Augusto Sakai, Sergey Spivak, which I'm actually pretty excited about because I didn't even know it was on the card until we were doing On to the Next One on Sunday, AK. And that one kind of tickled me a little bit. Ariane Lipsky is fighting Priscilla Cachuera. Of course, Ariane Lipsky, now that Sam Alvey has officially made weight, the lone weight miss on this card, 128.5 AK, is that what it was?
Yes. So she came in 129 and then brought out the box. I guess she thought like, well, if I'm 3 pounds over, they're definitely going to make it 30%. So they brought out the box and it's like an extra 0.5 pound. And now the final verdict is it is catch weight 20%. But like, if you're Cachuera's team, why would you care what she weighed without the, because they brought out the box right away. It's not like, oh, she went back to cut a little weight. Then she came out with the box. Literally, she stepped off the scale and they're like, I guess she was like, bring out the box as if she's going to drop 3 pounds by taking off her clothes. Like, I don't understand. I did not understand the logic before it at all. So, I mean, really she missed by 3 pounds if you want to be, but technically only 2.5 because she weighed with the box. I don't know. It made no sense.
Yeah, maybe it would have been the difference between 20 and 30%. I don't know.
Why would
speaking
it
be of Sam, I don't know. I don't know.
Just bizarre.
This is why I sit here and do what I do. Sam Alvey is fighting Mikhail Olszewczyk, 185-pound fight. It is what it is, and we'll see what happens. Takashi Sato fighting Brian Battle. Brian Battle, another tough alum, dropping to 170. Jason Witt, Josh Quinlan, Corey McKenna, Miranda Granger, Myra Bueno Silva, Stephanie Egger kick off the card. There's one fight I have left off, Shaheen, because I figured if we're going to go low-key bangers, I think we're all unanimously in agreement here that it is Terrence McKinney versus Eric Gonzalez. Absolutely. Or am I crazy?
No, yeah, that's it. You're absolutely right. That's the pick. The fact that Terrence, I know card placement doesn't matter on these sort of cards where it's all going to be on ESPN Plus, and we're going to, the only people watching are going to be us anyway, like the hardcore fans watching anyway. But I am surprised to see Terrence McKinney not getting a higher placement on this card. This dude is guaranteed excitement. He was, I think, considered one of the best prospects in that lightweight division until that last fight against Drew Dober, which, by the way, he almost like destroyed Drew Dober multiple times in that fight until like getting that turnaround in one of the wildest one round fights you'll see since Diaz Daly. So like, I love this fight. I'm still really high on Terrence McKinney. To me, losing to Drew Dober in your third UFC fight or whatever that was for Terrence, that is not a bad look at all. Like, Drew Dober is a legit top 20, top 17 type of guy and one of the deepest division, if not the deepest division in MMA. And to me, Terrence McKinney is, it's only a matter of when, not if, that this man is going to be in the top 10 at lightweight. He feels like an inevitability. He's still very, very young. And I like the idea of the UFC sort of resetting the clock here. They were seeing, you know, maybe we have something where we can expedite this guy, give him somebody like a Drew Dober. Almost worked, very nearly worked. If you run that back five times, Terrence might win three of them. Just even in that same sequence, like, Terrence might win three of them. But I like, again, the idea of resetting it, sending it back. Ghost Pepper is a good fighter at 155, but I don't feel like anyone thinks he's going to be a world beater. Sort of letting Terrence McKinney find his sea legs again, get some momentum, and then see if we can maybe restart this train. Because again, I think it's an inevitability that he will end up being someone that we are talking about in contention at 155 at some point in his career. And this is sort of the start of this next run, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, and Terrence McKinney took that Drew Dober fight as a like late minute replacement. Like, I think a little over a week's notice to step in and take that fight, and that fight was absolutely insane. His stock didn't drop at all. And maybe, AK, you might not like to hear this, but perhaps if he gets through this and he gets a big finish, perhaps maybe he has a meeting with one Paddy Pimblett, maybe at MSG. Is it possible?
No way.
No.
Paddy's fighting Tony Ferguson. You guys didn't hear about this? It's not official. Neither fighter has talked about it. It's like no one in the UFC I probably thought about it, but I'm Sorry, guys. No, it's not. This is not real breaking news. No. Stop the music. This is not real breaking news. I'm just saying. I put it out there. Well, I and one of our loyal listeners, Francesco, put it out there. And I'm just saying, it's out there in the universe. It exists in some form, raw form in the universe. Listen, that fight obviously makes a lot of sense. I think they would both want it. I think they would both think it's a winnable fight. I'm sure you guys will say, you know, McKinney will take his head off, but stylistically.
Yeah. I don't think the UFC would want that.
Not a crazy matchup. Guys, one other fight I want to mention. I have to, because this was, and I got to shout out again, our boys on No Bets Barred, Connor Brooks and Jed Meshew. What do you guys know about Corey McKenna? One of the best nicknames, by the way, Poppins. Corey McKenna versus Miranda Granger. What do you guys know about this matchup?
I know the statistic you're about to throw up.
Yeah, I have to.
We'll know what it is.
Yeah, I have to.
Throw it out.
Okay. Miranda Granger has a reach of 68 inches. Corey McKenna is listed at 58 and a half. She has a 10-inch reach advantage in the strawweight division. Like, hot heavyweight, light heavyweight, you might think you see something like that, as the body types, you know, the bigger you get, the more kind of diverse the body types can be. This is literally the lightest weight class. This is strawweight bout. This is the lightest weight class the UFC has. Somehow, one of the fighters has a 10-inch reach advantage over the other and is a plus 180 underdog. I don't know. I think Corey McKenna is really good. She also literally just turned 23 years old, I think like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. So I don't know. I'm not telling you to bet, but that's just a bizarre. They point that out on No Bets Barred. What a bizarre stat. 10-inch difference.
Yeah, that's a big reach advantage. Miranda Granger, first fight in almost 2 years since becoming a mom. So I know she's very excited about coming back. And Corey McKenna is coming off of a loss in her last fight at UFC London back in March. So should be a fun way to kick off or to get this thing rolling in the prelim. So let's go to the peeps. Maybe the peeps can fire us up a little bit for this one. Listen, this is not a great card. I think the time hurts it a little bit more. Like, if this is a 4 p.m. prelim, 7 p.m. main card, I think we would feel a little bit better about it, especially us whiny little East Coasters. But, I mean, there's some things to like here. Like, McKinney fighting is always a good thing. Eric Gonzalez is going to get in his face, throw punches at him, so that should be fun. I mean, there's some things to like, but coming off 277, just, yeah, it's kind of a hard hang. But we'll be watching, and we're going to find ways to make this as exciting as possible. Maybe you can too, Kay. Maybe the peep scan, Casey. Have they done this? Have they sold us?
Oh, absolutely not. No, no, not at all. We are being kind right now. We are being kind compared to some of the comments. We are UFC PR almost right now compared to the comments. But, oh boy. Here we go. Oh yeah, a lot of Tony Ferguson, Pimblett. I don't think people are on board with that.
This is AK. My least favorite running bit of yours ever, AK. I really do like it.
Not a bit. A bit will soon become reality.
If you're telling me I have Francesco, this man Francesco, to blame for this, I'm finding Francesco.
Our man in Italy. We love you, Francesco.
Otno will cease to exist. On to the next one will cease to exist if this fight gets made. Because there's no prediction, no fight pick, no matchmaking idea will ever defeat that one if it happens. AK been practicing his post-fight speech.
Yeah.
Thank you.
A lot of people think you should start doing some ghostwriting for some maybe some of these fighters.
Yeah. Yeah. But just like it's boilerplate. It's boilerplate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Save people a lot of time.
Or maybe Jed can do it, because his Michael Chandler promo on BTL yesterday was outstanding. I mean, AK just getting strays here.
I really just want to see Jed and Michael Chandler sit down for like a 15-minute interview and just see what happens.
It'd be the
just
best.
See the magic the that would play best. Out. But like right before the interview, I want Casey, I need you to make just like 2-3 minutes of just Jed going in on Michael Chandler and show it to Mike, and then we turn the camera on and see what happens.
Two or three minutes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Get the best.
I gotta make it really tight. Yeah. That's a really tight cut. And then like maybe two seconds of Jed going after he knocked out Tony. Okay, that was kind of cool. But then moving on. Yeah.
He lifted the ban and then he inserted the ban right back on him, like I think 3 days later. But let's continue on. Do we have any questions? Anything?
We have a question there is a question here, and I don't think we have an answer for this, but here we go.
Why is Sam Alvey still fighting?
Oh, I forgot.
This is because the UFC lets him. He's still getting paychecks. Like, that's all it is, right? Like, he hasn't gotten the call to be like, hey, you're no longer in the UFC.
Do we know he's getting a paycheck? Or is this like the guy from Office Space who just is there?
Milton from the UFC.
Yeah, he's Milton. Like, do we actually know he's getting paid to fight? Have we got confirmation on this? That's I don't know. This is
he's trying to get himself a new contract. Like, he is fighting this fight in hopes to get a new contract.
AK, can I tell you guys something? He is going to still be employed by the UFC after this weekend. Do you know why?
So that was going to be my question.
Yes, he is. But I'll tell you why.
Go for it.
I think so. Did we mention his weight cut situation? So his weight cut situation. We did the live update. So he did make weight, but he did have to take an extra hour. He was the last guy. He did miss weight in the first attempt by 1 pound. He's missed weight before. He's missed weight. I think 189 like 5 years ago.
When he's long time weight.
So anyway. Yeah, so it's not – which is this fight is that. This is a middleweight fight again. So
is it middleweight?
I have a – it is. Yeah, he's back down. Yeah, his last fight before this was light heavyweight, now back down to middleweight. I think Oleksaychuk
Oleksaychuk went down. Okay.
I think so, yeah. It's his middle – I believe this is middleweight debut. Yeah, his middleweight debut.
Yeah, no, this is.
Yeah. So – but I have a feeling that tough weight cut might come back to bite Mr. Alvey. And I don't wish these things upon anyone. I hate to talk about predictive fight cancellation. I have a weird feeling this fight is going to get canceled on Saturday, and Sam Alvey, it'll be rebooked or something, or Sam Alvey will get another opponent. Either way, Sam Alvey rides again.
Let me just throw out a scenario. What happens if Sam Alvey just goes out there and wins a very uneventful decision? Does this man still stay employed by the UFC at that point?
Yeah,
like, are we still seeing four or five more Sam Alvey fights? Is that all it takes, is one win regardless of how it happens?
Four or five. Oh my gosh. That's too bad. That's so many.
I think the amazing thing about Alvey is not necessarily his losses, because, you know, if you have a big roster, it's good for promoters to kind of keep these type of fighters on to kind of build up other fighters. But he's not really used like that either. He's not like this guy you use to, like kind of like Santos is. Yeah. We feel like Santos is being
a little bit
set up to make Hill look good. But I don't feel like Alvey is like, he's just on cards. He's not like.
Yeah, who has he made look good? Who has he made look good?
He made Julia Marquez look pretty good. Who, that's somebody there, like, he, like, he's maybe fight. Like the lower tier of the Thiago Santos make you look good gatekeeper type of guy, right? Where like you're not the top 10, top 15, mm-hmm. but like you're in that top 30, top 20 mix. Because he did it with Julia Marquez. And then Brendan Allen, who I think the UFC were high on for a second and maybe still are, like, he made him look good as well. Like, it's kind of reliable in that situation. But at a certain point, it's just like, if you lose eight in a row or whatever it's going to be, like, what are we doing?
He can break BJ Penn's record. He can break BJ Penn's record on Saturday night.
Can it? Okay, yeah, let's talk about that.
Eight winless. Tied. Eight winless.
So if he doesn't win or gets a draw tomorrow night,
he will own the record. It's all his. It's Sam Alvey's record.
So right now he's tied, but he can beat it, right? Is that what
he
you're saying?
He is tied. Oh. Yeah, eight. See, yeah, BJ went out with eight.
Okay, why didn't we not? Okay, we should have really left the show with this.
I know.
This is like, where were you when BJ Penn's record was broken? Where were you?
To be fair, though, I would rather BJ Penn not have that record. So if this is what it takes for a legend to not have that very inglorious record, like, that's fine. Maybe that was the UFC's angle this whole time.
There you go. See, I feel we talked this out. I feel like there was a big mystery, but now I think we got it. Now this is trying to so BJ Penn would not have this record anymore. So that's why Sam Alvey has to lose to save BJ Penn.
Until BJ Penn comes out of retirement to fight like Ilya Topuria in like 3 years for no reason.
Also, I don't think Sam Alvey's the kind of guy that's going to be banging on Hunter Campbell's door saying, hey, sign me to a four-fight deal and I want 40% more than my last contract. He's going to be like, listen, you know, if you want to give me like 10% less, like, I'm cool with that. Like, I just want to fight, man. And Sam Alvey, like, even though this record is kind of rough to look at, if you go back and watch like Sam's last few fights, like the Julian Marquez fight was a crazy fight. Like, yeah. Both guys are hurt. Good fight. The fight he had, UFC 249, I think it was. Good fight. Good fun. Good scrap. One he probably could have won. I think it was a draw, maybe. So, I mean, it's not like he's not winning. And if he doesn't get you out of there quickly, he's probably going to lose and get finished in the second round. But he's a fun 5-minute fighter. And I don't know. I'm trying to sell this, but yeah.
He comes out to Hey Soul Sister.
How's it go? That hurts my soul.
How does it go?
How does it go?
Doesn't matter. I'm not that familiar with the song. It doesn't matter. I couldn't sing it if I had to. It's a terrible song.
Could you cut a rug? It's cut a rug, dude.
I mean, listen, I'll dance to anything, but song is horrible. And the fact that is the most painful thing. Like, I have no problem with this man losing fights and sticking around. I don't care. Could the UFC not have at least asked him to change his music? If we had people have been cut for less, and this man is still allowed to, one, lose fights and also continue to come out to one of the worst songs ever written. It's just, I don't know. It's offensive.
So Train getting this much airplay in 2022 is way more egregious than Sam Alvey being on the UFC roster. I'm just throwing
Sam's
that out there.
Sam's keeping him alive by himself. Ahead. He's single-handedly keeping Train like relevant in any capacity. The card placement thing we've already established doesn't matter, but the fact that this is aligning the prelims above the Terrence McKinney fight is just, again, like, I don't... Whatever dirt
featured,
Sam Alvey has on the UFC... Whatever
freedom.
Dirt he has, whatever he's been doing behind the scenes to politic this, like, good for you, man. You're the best at keeping a job that you are no longer qualified to probably keep. It's that I've ever seen. It's crazy.
Is Eric Spicely still in the UFC? He's not in the UFC anymore.
No.
Okay. So there is no one on the roster, on the UFC roster, that Sam Alvey has victories over that's still on the roster. That's crazy. Yeah. I can't think of too many guys like that. Like, no, like, none of his wins. All the guys are long gone.
Yep.
Sam Alvey is amazing. Like, there needs to be a 30
for 30.
We
spent way too much time talking about Sam Alvey.
No, not enough. Not enough.
Did
I mention the Ultimate Fighter 30 finale is also on Saturday? Did I mention that? Did we talk about the Ultimate Fighter 30 finals? I don't think we... Yeah, there we go. Ultimate Fighter 30 finals. And the great thing is, as we said, it's a 10 o'clock start time. So for some reason, you really want to watch the Ultimate 30 finals. Like, you're legitimately having to be up to like 11:30, like 11:30 at night and possibly midnight, depending on how all the fights go, just to watch Mo Usman versus Zach Paga in the Ultimate Fighter 30 heavyweight tournament finale.
All right. Moving on to Sam Alvey.
Yeah, we'll take one more.
I read there were questions. I was like, why did we talk about Sam?
The best thing you got.
Sam Alvey got more talk on his show than Vicente Damluca.
He can break a record. What record is Luque going to break?
Oh, actually, that's a good question. He actually is. He can, with a finish, he can tie Matt Brown for the most finishes for UFC welterweight in history.
There you go.
Let's go.
AK coming in the clutch.
Yeah, he has 13. If it's a knockout.
I demand a redo. We're going to redo this whole damn show.
The whole show. If it is a knockout, Luque will have the most knockouts ever for a UFC welterweight. He has 11. He's tied right now with Worley. Shout outs, by the way, to Mike Bond and Michael Carroll. This is where I get a lot of these stats from. Thiago Alves, Li Jingliang, and Matt Brown have 11. So then Luque is tied with them for. He has 10.
This is just off the rails.
Is that right?
We're reaching for someone to break a record besides Sam Alvey.
Either way, ignoring the Li Jingliang thing, maybe I'm mistaken there. Sorry. He will tie. He has 10, so he can tie Matt Brown both for finishes and knockouts if he gets a knockout on Saturday. It'd be 11 knockouts and 14 finishes if he gets a knockout. So forget all the other.
Also, Vicente Luque could tie the record for knockouts on even days on Saturdays during summer months. So that's like a regional Minnesota Twins baseball stat right there. Wow. It's not true. I'm just saying that's how far we're reaching.
I would have believed it.
I had the breaking news music ready to go. I was like, oh, man, this is big.
Put it in the vault.
Breaking news again. My stat is way off. I'm sorry. I am stupid.
Okay, so
Thank you. The finishes was right. The finishes are right. I'm sorry. All these guys are way behind Matt Brown. I'm sorry. He will get sole possession of second place with 9 UFC knockouts as a welterweight if he gets a knockout. Okay. So what's on the line? Tying for finishes. And possibly second place knockouts.
We just went around in a circle for three minutes to land on a record will not be broken. Okay.
But one is sole ownership of second.
All right. Sam Alvey.
Full circle.
These comments are crap.
Listen,
someone just said petition to ban AK.
AK, put a poll up. Should AK be banned?
The poll that's up is rate the UFC Vegas 59. Excuse me, I should say the Ultimate Fighter 30 finale lineup out of 10. The 6 to 7 range leading out 42%, 5 or lower 30%. So 72% of this poll is rating about at best a 7 or below.
Well, you can hit the music.
Apex says, what are you guys talking about? And I don't even know anymore. I don't know.
Casey, you can hit the music because if you were on the fence about watching this card tomorrow, there's no way you're still on it. You're like one or two people have jumped over to the yes, I'm definitely watching. The others are going to be watching along with MMAfighting.com. And neither of those are wrong answers. So we'll talk more about it before the card tomorrow. Yeah. People's Pre-Fight Show. Bring your questions. It'll be exciting. For our statistician, Alexander K. Lee, Shahid Al-Shadi, E. Casey Lydon on the ones and twos. I am Mike Keck. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Lots of fun fights. The Sam Alvey card.
Could be a record breaker.
That's true.
Watch Vicente Luque. Watch Terrence McKinney. They deserve it. Let's go.
Yes. Agreed.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.